You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Hi, I'm Mohammeda El-Muhajir.
And I'm Nikita Newell Hall.
And together we are the hosts of The Soul Chronicles, a podcast that explores our life and times navigating the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. On today's episode, we talk about how we got in.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Nikita, so I had this idea just because I feel like we have such a unique background and experience. The sneaker industry is not the only time we work together, but it's definitely one that kind of like stands out on my, I would say, employment history. When people see the Nike name on there, they all get really excited. And I think the reason why people get so excited is it's kind of like one of those companies that people dream about working at, work about. It's like the best athletes in the world, one of the biggest companies in the world. And there are not a lot of women, young Black women who are there. So I just feel like our story, aside from that, from the corporate side, and then just from the entertainment, the Hollywood side, is just really unique. We have some crazy stories to tell. God. We work with some of the biggest artists in the world. And mm-hmm. I feel like people should just understand that experience, the entertainment marketing, marketing itself, brand marketing. I mean, I think we just have an interesting background to share.
The sneaker part really is at the core, I think, of what we were really able to accomplish together, mm-hmm. even though we worked on a ton of stuff after that time and before even. Yeah. So my hope is that people hear this and it somehow inspires them or encourages them or educates them on maybe a field or a career choice or even a life choice, right, that they might now consider making that they hadn't thought of before. So I'm happy to be on this journey with you.
Do you remember when we met?
Well, I think it was at William Morris, but was it before then?
No, it was at William Morris.
How we met. Now I think it's WMA, right? So back then it was the William Morris Agency, but now it's WMA. But right. For people who don't know, one of the top talent agencies in the world. So they represent actors, actresses, directors, writers, and now brands, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what that is for people who don't know.
Go ahead. Right. So even having that experience was already mega. When we met, I probably had only been working there for a few months. And as a fellow HBCU person, I went to Howard. Graham, that's right. I'm always really excited when I see another Black person. I'm not one of those Black people who see another Black person and get mad. I just never understood that. They want to be the only one.
It's ridiculous. Ah. Like, they want to be the only one. And I, you know, look, it's another conversation for another day. Yeah. But I do think that we are at a time in history mm-hmm. and we're at a place where we know we need each other.
I have been working there for a couple months, working with different agents. I walked down the hallway one day. Boom, who's this Black girl? Sitting at Peter Hess's desk.
And I was like, who is this little cutie tipping around the corner like she owns the joint? Hey, girl, hey. Help me figure out what the hey is going on around here. Because it was a situation.
So I, at the time, was working with Kara Lewis, who was one of the like infamous music booking agents in the industry. So I was like working at her desk as agent life, agency life.
What does that mean though? But what was your day-to-day job?
Okay, so basically Carol probably reps big artists at the time, Queen Latifah, The Roots, Outkast, D'Angelo, Erykah Badu, like just probably Eminem. I mean, just a bunch. I don't even know if Eminem was out at the time, actually. People would basically call all day long wanting to book artists. And so I would be the first point of contact, send us your bid or whatever, and just kind of like work on drafts of the contracts and stuff like that. Just so that's what I was doing. So that's how we first met.
Yeah, it was funny because I had previously been at the National Basketball Association. That's how I got my start. And just from working with the players and, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to agents on the phone. And in my mind, I was like really wanting to be an agent. But I knew I didn't want to be a sports agent because I wasn't really a sports person, which again, we can get into that. But I'd always been very much interested in entertainment. And a big part of my job was working with celebrities and entertainers, just getting them aligned with the NBA and a lot of our properties. So I just kept my mind fixed on wanting to be a talent agent. I started writing them, like literally just sending a note in. And I guess what they were saying, and I think this is a good part of the story. You couldn't just like get a job at these talent agencies, and you probably still can't, right? And so you kind of have to know somebody or be friends with somebody, or somebody's great uncle is opening a door for you, right? But I didn't have that. I grew up in Compton. I went to Grambling. I'm just a girl who pray every day and work hard, right? So I don't know any of these people. But I was coming from the NBA, and I just sent my stuff to HR, and they just never would call me. ever. And so finally they did. And the and I was a manager in player and talent relations. So they were like, well, you have to take a $30,000 pay cut and you have to be someone's assistant.
Yeah.
So I was like, again, I think one of the keys to my success anyway has been humility. I'm like, I don't care. I know if I get in, I'll rock it out and I'll work my way up. So it doesn't matter. And back then you started in the mail room, I think. So I was skipping that step. So to me, I was already up. And so I was booking celebrities in voiceover commercials because I was in commercials. Well, all commercials, but I did a lot of voiceover work and just commercial work. So that is what I was doing when I saw you coming around the corner. And then we just clicked and we had to sort of partner to figure out how to navigate that world because there wasn't a roadmap for us. I didn't know anyone who'd ever worked at a talent agency before. When I told people that that's what I did, they didn't have a clue as to what that even meant or how integral talent agencies were to getting anything done. And so just having that be our first meeting place, I think was just really kind of cool. I think we needed each other too for that emotional support.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And there's so few, I think at the time there was one black agent, something
lady.
Fields. I don't know what her last name was.
It was a lady, right?
Yeah.
I used to see her.
Right, but talking about the people who don't look out for other black people, like why she ain't see the two young black girls and be like, hey girl, come here. Sit down.
She's
girl,
who you are. For her life too, though. She's probably fighting for her life. You know, people be fighting all kinds of battles.
I know, but I'm just saying, even if she did that one time, hey girl, come in here. What you, who are you?
It would have made a difference. It definitely would have made a difference for sure.
Because we all know how difficult it is, especially for us to be in those doors. There's no small feat just to be in there. I don't care if we're doing the mail, doing the answering the phones. It's no small feat to be there. So we got to recognize each other. But then there was Adrian Sally, who's one of our very good friends.
Having Adrian there, I have to tell you, was really a blessing for me. And we had a connection because her cousin is John Sally, and I had known John from working at the NBA.
Right.
And so, again, these worlds are just really small.
So what was next? You left William Morris, and where did you go?
Yeah. So what happened is I was at William Morris, and Leah Wilcox, who is like the queen of the NBA, and I think sports in general, because for a whole lot of reasons, and I'll talk about her later, but she, they were holding my job for me at the NBA because she was like thinking I was going to come back, right? And I really wasn't going to go back, but she called me because this is the beauty of relationships. I'm talking genuine relationships. I think when you get off into Hollywood and you get off into sports, people are always looking to just leverage other people. What can I get out of you? Let me get close to that person because I think that's going to get me closer to the next thing. And that's a really dangerous sort of way to be, but it is very prevalent in these industries. Leah and I have forged a very genuine friendship. She became like my sister. And she called me and was like, well, I know you probably won't come back here, but this guy, Mark Herman, is at a smaller agency, and he's going to start the first sports agency within the context of a big talent agency. And so he's going to ICM, which is International Creative Management back then, which is now ICM Partners.
Okay.
Right? I think it's ICM Partners now. But, and so he's looking for a right hand, and I told him about you. And I was like, really? She was like, yes. And so sure enough, I met with Mark who turned out to be one of the most amazing human beings. He took me under his wing. We went over to ICM, and yeah, we started the sports division there, and it was just the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Who were you guys repping?
So we had Charles Barkley, and so we did all his commercials, his book deals, the thing to note about that role is we did everything except their playing contract. So every other deal they had, we did. So we repped. So we repped him exclusively, but we could do deals for anybody who wanted one. So we did deals for Evander Holyfield. We booked, what's that British guy who was a boxer who was super cute?
Yes. Lennox Lewis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Girl, it's so funny. I booked Lennox Lewis on that LL Cool J show. Remember back in the day he had that show on? And
LL had a show?
Yeah, Black Heart Revoked. Yes.
Okay. Lord. It was short. I know it was short.
It was bomb, though. Somebody's going to know the show. Okay. But anyway, so he had a show. And so I booked Lennox on that. So we booked
Wait. Oh, his TV show. I thought you meant hosting a show. Oh, his show with Maya. That's cute. Right. Yes. Okay. Yes. And he was like a football player, Marion. Yeah. I can't remember the show, but no, a good show. Yes. Okay.
Black Heart Restored.
No, thank you. For some reason, I thought you meant hosting. Yes. LL show.
No.
Yes.
His TV show. Yes. So I booked him on that. And then we did a book deal for Jerry Rice, a coffee table book. So just a ton of people booking them on things or securing deals for them. So Mark really taught me the art of the deal. He was a lawyer by trade. And so he really was unselfish in teaching me about contracts, about how to put deals together, about what makes a good deal, and about client services. You know, I had learned a lot from Leah about building relationships with people, genuine, authentic relationships. But then Mark taught me how to leverage that and make it all legal, right? Because one thing you did learn at William Morris is what? Put it in writing. So that's what I was doing at ICM. And I think at that point, you had moved on from William Morris and you went where?
Yeah, I know from there, I think I was like doing my own. Oh, remember I had my own little casting talent agency? Not talent management.
Oh, girl. Wait, did we book those twins that one time and then they didn't show up? Wait, what was that?
I don't know. And look, you used to give me the, what's the thing that would come out every day? This was, oh my God, we were so old school. It would come out in paper. Paper copies of the breakdown would be delivered to your office every day, like a stack of like 30 pages. Do people even know what paper is anymore? 30 pages of paper. And I had this little side hustle girl, and you would give me them breakdowns.
We got to look out for each other.
How long did you work at ICM?
I was at ICM for a year, and then I really started wanting to do more because, like I'm telling you now, I mean, it's 20 years later, so I don't think I can get in trouble, but I was booking people on things. I wasn't an agent, right? But I was doing the work because everybody's doing everything. And we had a small staff. And I wanted to be an agent because I'm doing the work, right? I have the rapport. I already had the experience. Coming from the NBA and William Morris. So why am I not an agent? So then I thought, okay, Nikita, you know, cool your jets, maybe just try to be a junior agent. And one thing that had happened to me once at William Morris and then now at this job is William Morris, they had said that, you know, look, we're all about booking clients and signing clients. We sign them, we get them booked. That's how we make our money. So if you help us sign people and then we book these people, then that's how you move up. So I had brought in a very famous baseball player, very, very famous in that time, like probably the single most famous baseball player on the planet because he had just won the World Series and was married to a superstar, Hollywood starlet. I said, I'm like, I'll bring this guy in, but I want to be his point of contact. Right. They were like, yeah, yeah, fine. And you know, in that world, in the agency world, a lot of those men are baseball freaks, right? Yeah. So I brought the person in. I did what I said. They had the meeting, they loved him, and he left. And so now it's just a matter of, let's get him signed. So I was like, okay, I can work on getting him signed, but I want to know like what my role is going to be on his team. I kind of knew I was going to be his agent because, hello, I just started working there.
Right.
But I just demonstrated what I can do. And they were like, oh yeah, you won't be on this at all. What?
As we said, navigating corporate America, because that ish happens all the time.
And what I knew was that I was the glue holding the whole thing together. So I politely called him and was like, yeah, go sign. Because everybody wanted to sign him.
Yeah.
Because just think about all the deals they could do with him. So I was like, yeah, don't come over here for what? Mm-hmm. Like, why? Because what I felt at that point is if they would do this to me and they're sitting in my face working with me every single day,
yeah,
then really what kind of integrity are they going to bring to you as your agent?
Yeah.
I didn't tell him that part, of course. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wasn't in no hurry to sign him to them, and he didn't. I do believe that Mark really tried to get me promoted. He came back and was like, yeah, they just said no. What?
Okay.
Not even to be a junior agent? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They said, you haven't been here long enough. Well, I've been here for a year. This is my year review.
Mm-hmm.
No. So then what I saw then was the writing on the wall.
Right.
Oh, I'm not going to be promoted here. It doesn't matter what kind of flips I turn. I just told you we're booking people all across all of these platforms. We very successfully have launched this, which now, by the way, is industry standard. You realize at major talent agencies, they have whole sports divisions.
Yeah.
That did not exist. We were the very first people to do that. So I already saw, like, I'm not about to spend 20 years of my life pushing this paper on this desk. Mark, as sweet as he is, I love him and Kristen to this day. But yes, no. And so I think I was ready to go, and my friend James Andrews called and was like, oh, there's this job at Nike that I think you should apply for.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, no, thank you. Because I just keep getting roped into the sports thing.
Right. And you're trying to get
I was trying to get out of the sports thing. So now, fast forward, when James is talking about this Nike job, I just see more sports.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, dude, I'm just more on the entertainment side. He said, well, actually, it's Nike, but it's entertainment marketing.
You're like, ah!
So a part of me was, but the other part of me was like, I'm not really a marketer. So he says, well, the girl who's interviewing for the job is having a hard person finding somebody, and I already told her you were going to send your stuff over there, so just send it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay. So now at this point, I just wanted to get back to LA because I love New York. I love New Jersey. It's been 5 years, and I needed to get back to LA. So long story short, I ended up getting that role, and they moved me and all my stuff back to LA. So that's how I ended up at Nike. And then when I got there and saw what the job was, at the time, it was music marketing manager.
Yes.
So our role was just to get Nike product on music stars. I mean, that's the short version. And then I think, did I get promoted? And then I called you? Like,
No. Let us stop there. Okay.
Okay.
So
okay.
You got this job at Nike, right? Which I heard the job and I was like, what kind of, this is like the most amazing job I have ever heard of. I'm like, how do you work at Nike and it's entertainment and you give them like free sneakers to stars? I just used to be like, this is the most amazing job that like I've ever heard of, right? And I was like, wow. And so you had that job, and I think I did one thing for you once and you sent me a pair of sneakers, but like we're not sneaker people like that. Like, so this is crazy that our whole podcast is about sneaker industry. But like even when I pitched the show to you, you were like, I don't wear no sneakers. And I'm like, girl, me neither. But it's crazy how
stay focused.
It's so crazy how sneakers were searched. So I wasn't like excited about working at Nike because of the shoes. Cause I mean, I'm like, okay. I mean, it's great, but it's just like, wow, this super huge brand. And then the role that you had, right? So I was just like, wow. And I remember that you used to be like so crazy busy. Like you couldn't even get on the phone. It was just like, you know, you just like, yeah. And then I even think while you worked there, I came to LA once, stayed at your house in Culver City when you worked at Nike. And like, you never came home. Like it was crazy. And
it was nuts.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that was pre me working there. Okay.
People do tend to hear Nike, NBA, you it's have like a casting company. It sounds like a party a day. It sounds like you are out here turned up every waking hour. And what people really don't realize is that there's a corporate side to all of this.
Yes.
And there is a multi-billion dollar business and tons of money at stake around every corner. And so, yeah, it's cute if I say it to you, but if you really had to walk in these shoes, no pun intended, to see the business part of it, why, how these brands became what they are, and what the day-to-day there looks like, and how decisions get made, and how they continue to make the companies profitable year mm-hmm. over year. And, mm-hmm. you know, just all the business part of it, I think is very interesting. And I think it's very difficult to walk that tightrope. And you're right. Like, I didn't even know my name at that point because, you know, another thing I learned about myself once I stopped to take stock in my career is that I never really had a job that somebody else had before, mm-hmm. even you know what I'm saying? So yeah. When I first went to the NBA, I worked in operations, which is a whole nother story. I'll talk about that more in detail, but no one had had that job before me. When mm-hmm. I went to William Morris, I worked for Peter Hess. He was a new agent. He never had an assistant before. So that was a mm-hmm. brand new role. Mm-hmm. When I went to ICM, I told you Mark just started that from mm-hmm. nothing. So that was yeah. a new role. So when I came to Nike, they had had a person in music marketing before. But the role was evolving.
Yeah. Okay.
It was evolving into something else mm-hmm. and it was getting more ingrained in the business side of yeah. things. So it wasn't yeah. just giving away sneakers. Mm-hmm. And then I elevated to a role that I created mm-hmm. with my boss. So no one had ever had that role before, even to one of the roles I have today, no one's ever had that. So because no one had ever done that job before, trust me when I tell you, I was just trying to keep my head above water mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And trying to navigate a 30,000 person organization, right? Mm-hmm. I was one of 30,000. You know, my yeah. employee number was 31435, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So I was the 31,000.
Girl, you remember that? Jesus. Yes. Oh yes, my girl. God. Look, I didn't, you just telling me something new. I never knew that our employee number was the number or higher. Ooh, just yeah. learned. At this time, I had moved on from like the casting and stuff, and I was working on my documentary film.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I had gone to Tokyo and to Cuba filming my global hip hop documentary. And in the midst of that, I remember somebody called me about a job at a record label, right? And it was in LA. And I was like, I'm so East Coast.
I grew up in right.
Philly. I went to school in DC. I lived in New York. And I was like, just East Coast. And I just was not the biggest fan of LA. But I knew somebody who could get me hyped on LA. And that person was you. So I was like, called you up. And I was like, girl, somebody called me. They want me to come work at, I think it was LaFace. Yeah, I feel like it was LaFace or something like that. And it's in LA. What do you think? This time, like, your mom had passed. And yes. you were like, I can't take the stress of this job like this. This doesn't even have any meaning, giving sneakers away. Like, what is this? And you were like, want to be part-time. You remember this?
No, I wanted to be the receptionist.
Right, you wanted your And they were like, how are you going from a manager to the receptionist?
Easy. Right? Let me tell you how. Yeah, because I think when you experience that kind of loss, I'm an only child, right? I mm-hmm. grew up mainly with my mom. My stepdad and my mom divorced when I was 13. I never met my biological dad. Mm-hmm. So for me, she was my world. So I think at that point, I did start to really question a lot of things. And I was tired, too. Mm-hmm. But business first, girl. You have these stock options. You're getting mm-hmm. this nice check. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not that depressed and in mm-hmm. grief that I'm going to throw all that away. Mm-hmm. So I want to hold on to those things. It's a wonderful company. They have incredible benefits. So I'm not trying to quit. But I do feel like if I can just go sit out there and answer that phone, I can keep all my benefits, come to work every day, and I would do a great job. And I think still, I mean, I'm like, I think that was a good plan. But for other people,
They ain't having no brilliant mind. Your work ethic, ain't nobody gonna lose that. Once they have a taste of that, girl, no.
But I was like, no. So I think that's when you were talking about coming to LA, I was at that point when the receptionist thing didn't work, I was like, well, fine, then I'll be the associate director. I'll just run the whole group.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I think that was Pam's idea. You didn't think of that. Like, she was like, she came up with that plan.
Yeah, maybe because she was in Portland, right?
Yes.
She was based in Portland and was commuting back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so I was really...
She was going to take her leave of absence and she needed somebody. So I guess maybe before you did your receptionist job, She wanted you to cover for her while she went
on her leave.
Yes, that's what happened.
That's right.
So in the midst of that, I called you to tell you about this record job. And you were like, well, girl, if you're going to come and do that, then you might as well come here and do my job, because you guys were looking for, you were looking to replace you. You were looking for your replacement.
Yeah.
And you were looking for, that's what happened. You were looking for somebody to do the music job because you were either going to be the receptionist or, listen to this, y'all, either the receptionist or the associate director of entertainment marketing. Just one or the other. You told me, listen, send your resume to me. And I'm going to send it to my boss. And I think I had just done something in a magazine. You were like, send me that clipping of you two and let me send all that to her. She was like, and you were like, I'm not going to say that we know each other or anything like that. Let me just send your info and then let's see what happens. So you did that. And in the meantime, in my life, I was planning to go to Europe for like 3 weeks to go and film my documentary, right? So Pam called me, I did a phone interview, and she was like, okay, well, can you come like next week to Portland for the interview? And I was like, actually, I can't, because on Saturday, I'm going to Paris, right? Look, we just too, I mean, this is too much, right? And she's like, well, I guess I'll see you on Friday. So I came to Kansas, did the interview, and went back to New York the same day.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And I got back to New York, like it was a red eye flight, got back to New York in the morning and literally got on a plane the same day and went to France.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that just speaks so much about like why you have been so successful too, because you got to be able to respond and you have to be ready. When people call you and say the opportunity is now, get on the plane, mm-hmm. it's too late to try to get your story together. Mm-hmm. But you got it.
Yeah, so I got it. So while I'm in France, you were like, I need you to come back now. Yeah, because Pam was going on her leave and you needed to take over, and then somebody needed to do music while you were doing being the director. And I was like, dude, I can't. I got to go back to New York first and then I can come to LA. And it was just crazy. So from that, like my life was just like a crazy roller coaster from while I was in Europe, coming back to New York for 4 days, and then to LA to start working. And you're right, now we can get to the part. I ain't have a license. Okay, full disclosure.
For good reason.
Girl, I had a permit. And that is all that I had. Because you know, I live in New York. You do not have to drive in New York. And I landed, and you came to the airport, you rented me a car, because you know how the Nike thing was, anybody at Nike could give a car to somebody else. And you rented a car, and you said, here's the keys, you went and got in your car, you're like, follow me. I got into the car, Jesus Christ was with me on that day, Lord. Girl, I was like, Muhammad, what are you doing? I put the keys in the thing, and my eyes are probably closed while I'm driving, because I am like, what am I doing?
And LA is not the place that you need to learn how to drive on your own for the first time. Let me just say that.
That is what I did, and I bumped up that car. I'm not even going to say the company name. By the time I turned that car in, Lord, I broke off the side mirrors. So now here we are. We're both at Nike at this point. We're both at Nike. I'm doing music. You are associate director. I don't know. How long did Pam do her leave? 6 months or something? It was kind of some significant.
I don't know. It was a long time. I couldn't wait for her to come back because I was like, oof.
Yeah, because you were basically overseeing the music manager, me, the TV mm-hmm. manager, the film manager, and all of our assistants. Yep. And operations. And you had to go to Oregon to like represent entertainment marketing at campus.
Yes, every week. This is a role that hadn't existed before, right? Mm-hmm. So just trying to figure out, and not having a lot of female executive mentors at that point that I could go to, because to your point, like, who else is working in the sneaker industry that I could go to and be like, girl, help. So Pam was a good mentor for me 100%, but her entire career had been spent inside of Nike.
Yeah.
So she really helped me to navigate that huge machine, which was very, 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 very difficult on the corporate side of things. But yeah, so that's how we really started working together day to day. And then after, then I left because I wanted to start a family. I had eventually gotten married. And
Right. But that was like about three years. I feel like after. Maybe, yeah. So we worked together for like 3 years. And it was rare to have two Black women in this kind of roles. Like I was under your leadership as the associate director. But it was just rare to have two Black women everywhere. And people, you remember how everybody would just mix our names up all the time.
Right. And then they would always try to call you M, and I would be like, actually, no, her name is Muhammad. You can say this word.
And just to speak a little bit about the nature of our work, when I was there, I understood everything about what your life had been. I understood why you never had any time. I mean, it was just like a nonstop job. It was just nonstop. So basically, in my particular role, I took over from you and was kind of like the liaison between Nike and the music industry, working with artists, working with executives, working with our ad agency, just to kind of like be on the pulse of what's going on with music and making sure artists had all the hot new product that they were wearing it. And just from a marketing job at the end of the day. We're always looking at how entertainment could be a part of the Nike bigger brand story, product launches, integrating artists, booking artists. Here we are again, booking artists.
We were like the in-house Nike agency.
So this is kind of like the beginning. And then just through this podcast, we're going to just kind of like take you through some of the wild stories that we have, some of the corporate stories. There was a lot of fun, but it was just working at a corporation. And then even after Nike, we still worked in sneakers. So hopefully, guys, you enjoyed the show today. Definitely tune in to our next show. I think the next show, it might be, I mean, I don't know. We're going to think about it. But just because I'm like so crazed about The Last Dance, and we both had
the experience of working with Jordan,
that Jordan might be our next show.
Okay. I have a couple of stories I can share. That would be good.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.